discussing the halachos of Hachana on Shabbos, we said that even something which is not a melacha, something which is not offered rabbana, something which has got no tircha, doesn't take an effort. Nevertheless, if what you're doing is not for Shabbos, then it is also to do it. So to move something which is not mukta from one place to another, but the purpose of your of doing that is for the sake of tomorrow, that would constitute hachana. We said sleeping on Shabbos afternoon, if you're doing this, so you can be awake on Moedah Shabbos. So we said that mi'ikah din it's mutter, but you mustn't say I'm doing it for tomorrow. So then it makes it that what you're doing is doing it for tomorrow, not that you're doing it for today's enjoyment. We did say that any time you do something where there is Shabbos gain out of what you're doing, there's a need for Shabbos, even though it might be a secondary need, it might not be the main reason why you're doing this, but there's a Shabbos gain to it, so then that, so to speak, legitimizes what you're doing and makes it mutter to do. So we mentioned that you're allowed to make the beds. You get up on Shabbos morning or Shabbos afternoon after your nap. You're not going back to bed again, but you want your room to look tidy. So even though you're tidying it up so that tonight your bed is made, but you want the room to look tidy now. So even if it would be that your primary purpose of doing this is so that tonight it should be ready for use, but there is a immediate gain from what you're doing, so then it would be mutter to do. We're going to see, as I said, these halachas are complicated because the rules are not very concrete. There are so many exceptions, so we'll try to stick to the examples and try to understand it, but bear with me that there's sometimes things that, as I said, sleeping on Shabbos, that why should that be also? It's not also, but if you say it's for tonight, it can become also. So we're going to see more of that. So what we left off was with tidying up your rooms and things like that, where you want Seder and Nikoyan on Shabbos, you want your house to look neat and tidy, which is covered Shabbos, and therefore that would make it permissible to do on Shabbos, even if your primary reason is that it will be easier to clean the house on Moedah Shabbos, but do it now. But since now I gain from it, so therefore I can do it. Therefore, after a meal, the table can be cleared. You can throw away what needs to be discarded. You can put in the sink what needs to be put in the sink, and you can put in the fridge what needs to go in the fridge. Not only that, the Aruch HaShulchan, the quote from the Aruch HaShulchan, that when you bring the dishes to the sink, to the kitchen, you can even place them in a way that will be easier to wash them on Moedah Shabbos. So you can't sit down in the kitchen and now start organizing your kitchen so that when Moedah Shabbos comes, the dishes will go quicker. But when you bring them to the kitchen and put them down, you can put them down in a way that will be the easiest to deal with when Moedah Shabbos comes. The halacha that he brings it from is an interesting halacha. We have in the minhag is that on the last day of Sukkot, before we have Simchas Torah, Shemini Atzeres, we bring in the table from the sukkah. It's like we say goodbye to the sukkah and we bring in some of the furniture from the sukkah. Now here in Eretz Yisrael, this is not so relevant because that's a lot of what I'm going to say, because the last day of sitting in the sukkah is on Hoshana Rabbah, which is Chol HaMoed, and you're preparing for Yom Tov. Chol HaMoed can prepare for Yom Tov. Yom Tov can't prepare for another day, but Chol HaMoed can. In Chutz Laaretz, it's a little bit more difficult because the last day that they sit in the sukkah is Shemini Atzeres. True, they don't make a bracha. There's different minhagim, it's how you sit in the sukkah, and some people don't sleep that night in the sukkah, whatever it is, but l'maisa, they do still have a sukkah. Al Sreka de Yoma, Min Chutzlaaretz, we have 2 days Yom Tov, so therefore, sukkah extends into Shemini Atzeres, and you have a bit of a, what they call a contradiction, that you're making Kiddush and saying today Shemini Atzeres, and where do you make that Kiddush in the sukkah? But, that's the minute, is that they sit in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres. At the end of the day on Shemini Atzeres, before Simchas Yom Tov now, it says to bring in the table. Now, the reason you're bringing in the table is not really that you're preparing for Simchas Torah, it's because you're saying goodbye to sukkah. Says the halacha, when you bring the table in, you're allowed to bring it in, but you cannot put it into its proper place. You cannot, the lashon they use is to be oireach hashulchan. If your table was a folding table, for example, and you folded it up in order to carry it in, so to unfold it and put it up would be already hachana for the night. You can bring it in folded and leave it there. Or, what was more common, they didn't have such good folding tables, no, it was more common, was you had a frame, and on top of the frame you put a board, a tabletop. So you carry the tabletop into the house, and then you carry the frame into the house. So you can't put the board on top of the frame, because that makes it, that is now preparation for service. This Aruch HaShulchan, if the way you stand it up in the house is by putting the pieces together, that is how you carry it in, and then you unfold it and set it up, just so it doesn't fall over and people don't trip on it. So that is part of the taking out. That's not considered as preparing for tonight. It's all one long action of bringing it into the sukkah, which includes setting up for tonight. And therefore, even though the setting up is really for tonight, but since it's part of the original action, which was done for today, it becomes mutter. So from that they learn that if I'm bringing dishes from the table into the kitchen, when I put them in the kitchen, it's all part of the bringing out from the salon to the kitchen, and it's still part of that action. So even though I finish it off by placing it in a way that makes it easier for Motzei Shabbos, that's not a separate action that I'm doing for Motzei Shabbos. That's just a continuation of what I started for Shabbos, which has an advantage for Motzei Shabbos and therefore becomes Motzei. I hope that's understood. A little complicated, but that's the logic behind it. Therefore, when you do something, so to finish off, even though you finish it off in a way that's really advantageous to after Shabbos, it's mutter because what you're doing started off as something which is for Shabbos. So as we said, a table can be cleared. Now, very clearly after the morning meal, no problem to clear the table because you're going to need the table later for the afternoon meal, and therefore you're doing it for Shabbos. But what about after Shabbos shift? May you clear the table? And the answer is, depending on the circumstance. If there is time left to Shabbos and you will appreciate a clean room, then that's Torah Shabbos. It's going to help you that you spend 15 minutes now clearing the table, and the Motzei Shabbos you can start washing the dishes immediately, and you don't have to clear up first, so you can get the 15 minutes ahead in your schedule. So that's not a problem, because essentially you're doing it for Shabbos also. And as we said before, it doesn't matter what was the primary reason, what was the secondary reason. As long as Shabbos was one of the reasons that you're doing it, that makes it permissible to do. So you may clear the table after Shalosh Shulis. However, if Shalosh Shulis has ended right before Shabbos ends, so now you can't exactly say, well, I'm feeling it so the room should be clean for Shabbos. There's not really much time on Shabbos to enjoy that clean room. Then you know what you're doing now is preparation for Motzei Shabbos, and then it cannot be done. Or another example would be, is if you ate Shalosh Shulis in a room, that after you finish, you leave that room and you're not going to come back to that room on Motzei Shabbos. You're not going to come back to that room on Motzei Shabbos, so you can't say, until Motzei Shabbos, so then you can't say that, well, I'm cleaning up for the sake of Shabbos because I want my room to be clean. You're not going to be using that room. It's not going to bother you. So therefore, that would lose the hetzer of tidying it up because it's no longer a Torah Shabbos. We will see that the Makom Hefzer, you're allowed to do forms of Achana. And therefore, even if you're not going to be using the room, things that might get spoiled or might bring bugs or something like that, you can put away. So you can put away food and leftovers and clear up the mess so that it shouldn't bring bugs or something like that, or the food shouldn't go off. But to sweep up afterwards or roll up the tabletop and put it away or chuck it away, whatever tabletop you're using, would then be forbidden to do. Which follows an interesting situation, which I find is difficult for people, for some reason difficult for people to implement, but it's brought down in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchos of Black and White. And he says that if you hire a horn for an event on Shabbos, as we spoke about previously, it's Chal Shabbos, you did it correctly. Hired it without a problem. Now you set up a meal for Shabbos, as we once did. We had a winter Shabbos, and there's no time to have a nice long Sheva Brachos in the morning, and then again a Sheva Brachos an hour later in the afternoon. So we split our meal in two. We had Mincha in the middle, and we were finished 2 hours before Shabbos. So that way we had done our morning meal at Mincha, afternoon meal, and everybody went to take their Sheimnish B'Shabbos Tanuk Shluch after Shalosh Shulis. And now we weren't using the hall anymore. Once Shalosh Shulis was finished, everybody went to their places they were staying or home or whatever it was, and we regrouped for Maariv, which was in the local shul and not in the hall. So the hall was no longer in use after Shalosh Shulis. So the chori, you've lost the heter of cleaning up after the meal, because you can't say it's covered Shabbos. I need this place to look tidy for Shabbos. No one's there. And I can't say that I need to prepare the hall for the next meal. If you were having a morning meal and afternoon meal, so fine. What does it make a difference if you clear up straight after the first meal or just before the second? You need the room for today, so you can clean it up in the morning. It's not like boiler that has to be done immediately before. This is just hachana, so it's not considered hachana l'chol because I'm preparing for the afternoon. So after the morning meal, I can clean up the hall and sweep and change the tablecloth and set the table and everything because I'm doing it for today for Shalosh Shudas. But I for sure can't do it for Malava Malka or to make it easier on Moitzeh Shabbos. So when a hall is rented out for a Shabbos event and then rented out for a Moitzeh Shabbos event and the hall owner puts pressure on the people who rented for Shabbos that it should be clear on Moitzeh Shabbos as soon as possible so the next people can come in. So what do? As soon as Shabbos Shudas is over, they clean the hall and they sweep up and they put the chairs on top of the tables and everything goes in the garbage. So, okay, they haven't done sponger and they haven't wiped down the surfaces, but 90% of the work is done. So Moitzeh Shabbos, they come in and they do the last 10% and the hall's ready for the next event. That very clearly is clearing the hall for Moitzeh Shabbos. And that becomes awesome. And, or if someone rents a venue for a Kiddush on Shabbos morning, for example, your shul has a hall. We have one in the Grosh Shul, it's a downstairs hall, and the hall gets rented for a Kiddush. And after the Kiddush, no one's going back to the hall. Even if there is or isn't an event for Moitzeh Shabbos, the hall's not going to be used in Shabbos. So where's the hesed to clear the hall after the Kiddush? As I said, you can put away the food, and you can clear up the remnants and the dirt that's going to bring flies and bugs and whatever, so that you don't have that a problem like that. But then to take off the plastic tablecloths, to take out the garbage and carry it to the street, where's the hesed from that? So that I asked. I don't have an answer, and if people find out, it will be nice to hear, because I do see, unfortunately, people are not aware of this. Okay. Okay, now we'll find a couple of exceptions to the rule, and we'll explain them. And that is, if you have you have a kiddush in a sukkah. Let us say the shul has a sukkah, and it's not going to be used after the kiddush. For whatever reason, those who learn are not going to be learning in the sukkah, and those who are eating in the sukkah, you have a sukkah that was put up, say, not a shul sukkah. The sukkah was put up just for the kiddush on Yom Tov morning, Shabbos morning, whatever it was, Shabbos Chol HaMoed, Shabbos Yom Tov, something like that, and the sukkah is not going to be used the rest. Or, I'll give you another example, you ate in your sukkah Yom Tov morning, and after that you're going to take a long walk and not come back till night, to visit someone, whatever it was. So the sukkah is no longer in use. So l'chayre, the same svara apply. But if the sukkah is no longer in use till nightfall, so any cleanup I'm doing now is cleanup for later and not for now, because I'm not going to appreciate the tidiness that I'm doing now. It's not really have any toilets. For now, it should be offset. So here we're going to say no, because a sukkah with dirty dishes is a fossil sukkah. One may not leave used dirty dishes in a sukkah, because that is a bizoyan. While you're eating out of your dishes and while you have your pots and pans that you're serving from, they are for the meal and therefore they are part of the meal. At the moment the meal is over, all these utensils become a problem and one may not leave them in the sukkah. So here, for the sake of the sukkah, you may clean it out, because even though you're not going to be using the sukkah, but the sukkah itself shouldn't have these dishes left inside. So then it's so that my sukkah should be not mavuzah, should not be discarded like that, and degraded, that you can actually clear it up for the sake of the sukkah. Another example would be if a kiddush was made in a Beis HaMedrash. And even if it will be a Beis HaMedrash that no one's going to be learning in it or davening in it for the rest of the day, but to leave the Beis HaMedrash with dirt inside is a bizoyan, it's not covered Beis HaMedrash, therefore for the sake of the Beis HaMedrash, it becomes a Torah Hayom, and you may clean up after the Kiddush to make it decent and clean and honorable again. If a person wants to light a candle on Yom Tov afternoon, just know that you're allowed to light candles on Yom Tov. The candle obviously has to have some use. You can't just light for no reason. But if you want to light a candle that is not considered Ner Shabbat Olah, it's considered that you've got use out of the candle, and you want to light it on Yom Tov afternoon, and essentially because you need it because it's getting dark and you need it for tonight. So that would be a problem to light such a candle on Yom Tov because you need it for tonight, unless you're going to get some gain from it still today. And that is, in particular, where you, in the olden days, where the windows were facing, where the windows were small and they didn't have much light coming in. And therefore, already half an hour before sunset, the house was dark, and lighting a candle would make it more comfortable and nicer in the house. So then it would be permissible to light a candle for tonight, but already getting gain from it this in the afternoon, so then that makes mutter. So that would be also a halacha lemaaseh if you're having Yom Tov, which is followed by Yom Tov Sheni. So the minhag is that when you have such a case, the woman lights her candles after dark on Yom Tov Sheni, but that's because today we have electric lighting in our house, in our homes, and no one's going to tell you that half an hour before Shkia, a candle is going to really make such a difference to my house. Therefore, there's no hesitation to light a candle on the first day for the second night, saying, well, I need it now. You don't need it now. Your house is bright and you don't need it now. And you need it for tonight, so you light it tonight. Hi, what do you do when Yom Tov is followed by Shabbos? You may not light the candles after Tasting Shabbos. So then you have to light the candle on Friday afternoon, on Yom Tov during the day. So then we rely on Erev Toshilin, which is the exception where you may do Hachana from Yom Tov to Shabbos. Even in a case where we say the house is dark and you want to light, that's the gabbe, the lighting of the candle. But just to prepare candles for the night, and you're not going to be lighting them, well, then there's nothing to gain from today. It's the preparation of the candles for later on. For example, you want to light the Yom Tov Sheni candles. So one of the things you want to do is perhaps just set them up, even though on Yom Tov the candlesticks, the candles themselves are not mukta. Nevertheless, what you're doing is for tonight, and therefore it's possible to do. Something which is done habitually. Now, we're not talking about something which is obviously not a melacha, not one of the Lamentes melachas. It's not an Issa d'Rabbanan. Neither is there any effort involved in what you're doing. We still say that such items that you do, if they're done for tonight, will be considered as forbidden. But if it's something that is done out of rote and out of habit, something you do on a regular basis, so then the person doesn't even think about what he's doing, that he's doing it for later, for now or for later. Therefore, this is just habitual. This is how you usually behave, that you do something. And it turns out what you're doing now is for later, because that's the way I normally do it. We're going to give a heter to do it on Shabbos, Yom Tov, whatever, even though the benefit of the action that you do now is for tonight, but it's never specified, and it hasn't taken any conscious effort to say, oh, I need to do this for tonight. I'm just doing this because this is how I do it. Let me give an example, and you'll understand. Is a man who takes his talis to shul on Shabbos morning, whether he's wearing it or he's carrying it in a place of his meiruv, and after davening, he takes it home again. That is habitual. You take the talis, you put it under your arm, and you walk home. Now, you tap the man on the shoulder, and you ask him, what's under your arm? He says, talis. You ask him, why you take it home? He says, oh, because I don't want to leave it in shul and have to come back on Moshe Shabbos. So true, he's doing it for Moshe Shabbos. But when he did it, that was because I tapped him on the shoulder and asked him. When he did it, that is habitual. You bring a talis to shul, you take it home again. You put something in your pocket. Person put tissues in his pocket, so that if he needs a tissue, he has it available. Now, if someone does that so that he needs something for later, then this is just the way you do it. So we'll give some more examples. You take a book out of your to read, and when you're finished, you put the book back on the bookshelf. Now, if I tap that person on the shoulder, I said, why did you put that book back? Because that's where the book belongs, and if I don't put it back, I have to put it back later. So I might as well put it back now. Are you doing it for later? You're not doing it really. You don't get much gain. One book lying around is going to ruin your whole Shabbos, make your house look messy. No, because that's the way we do things. You read a book and you finish it, you put it back. And halavai, my children would have that habit. But those who do have the habit, that's not considered as hachana, that you can take it off, that putting it back would be a problem. So these are the type of things. You take something out of it, and now you put it back. You Shabbos afternoon, you take out some cold water from the fridge, you pour yourself a cup of cold water, and you're probably not going to drink again, but you put the water back in the fridge. So that Moshe Shabbos is cold? That's not what I was thinking. This is where the bottle goes. I put it back in the fridge. This is automatic. So food can be put into the fridge. We can put back those things that can put into the freezer. Can be put into the freezer. These are the things that a person does habitually, and therefore they're not considered as this with specific intent for tonight, even though we know that that's where the game comes in. to take something out of the freezer to defrost it. No, that's already an action on its own that is thinking about that it's going to be for tonight. So on Yom Tov, when you're going to have Yom Tov Sheni or something like that, you can't take something out of the freezer on the first day Yom Tov so that it will be defrosted by the time the second day Yom Tov comes, because clearly you're doing it for tomorrow. Another example of something which is done regularly is when you put dishes in the sink, you can fill the sink with water and let them soak in water, because that's the way you put the dishes in the sink so they don't attract flies, or even if it's not because of something now, but that's the way you put them away, then he says the Shmur Shabbos, that is not considered as Hachana, that's just the way you put them away. Just as an aside, he says that soaking dishes in the sink is only mutter when the food is still soft and moist, and you're not actually doing anything by soaking, you're just stopping it from getting harder. Something that is hardened back to the plate, and now you soak it, so then it looks more like you're preparing it for tonight's washing, that the food should be soft to come off easily. Then he says you can't do this. You can only do it if the food is still moist, and not if it says dried out. If you're going out for a walk on a day where the evening is going to be cool, but now in the afternoon it is not cool, and you take a sweater or a jacket with you and you throw it over your shoulder or over your arm in place with its neighbor, of course, so you want to take it with you, knowing that soon it's going to be cold, that's the way we go out. We go out and we take something with us. You leave the house, you lock the house, you put the key in your pocket, and you walk off. Now it turns out that you're not coming back to your house for Moshe Shabbos. That's just the way we lock up the house. We put the key in our pocket. Obviously, it's not where there's a neighbor, there's no problem with doing such a thing. So even if you leave the house just before Shabbos ends, and you know you're not going to be back till after Shabbos has already ended, that is the way you lock up the house. It's not considered as I prepared this for Moshe Shabbos. So that was one form of exception to the rule. Another form is, again, something which is not a malacha, not a rabbanon, there's no tircha involved, can still be a problem of achana if it's done for tonight. But if there was a way I could do it on Shabbos in a hetedika way, so then even though my intention is to do it for a weekday, I can do it on Shabbos. Let me explain this. It sounds a little complicated when you give it as a rule, so I'll give you an example. And these two halachas, there's another halacha which we'll actually mention next week get to, but when we talk about what you're allowed to talk about on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to say, I'm going to do a certain, even though I'm not doing it, and I'm talking about I'm going to do it on Sunday. Nevertheless, we don't talk about malachas on Shabbos. A typical example is, you can't say, I'm driving to Yerushalayim on Sunday, because you use the word driving. Driving is also on Shabbos, you may not drive to Yerushalayim on Shabbos, and therefore you can't talk like that either. You can say, I'm going to Yerushalayim on Sunday. What's the difference? It's because going is lav dafka considered something also. You can go to Yerushalayim in a way that's mutter. You can walk to Yerushalayim. How you tell me there's a tchum, I could get around that with the various aids of tchum, whether you make burgenin or an eruv or whatever the case may be. There is a way to get around it. I can even say that I'm taking my talis and shilin, or taking my talis with, I it's carrying. No, because I could have put up an eruv all the way from here to Yerushalayim. The fact that I didn't is a separate issue. I didn't talk about a malacha, because intrinsically there was an option that what I said doesn't really mean I'm doing a malacha, because there's an option to have done it in a mutlika way, and therefore my speech has not crossed the guidelines of what's considered permitted speech and also speech, because I haven't said outright, I am going to make a fire tomorrow. That would be also, there's no way to make a kosher fire on Shabbos. But if I say I'm going from place A to place B, I could find a heter way of doing it, even though everybody knows when I go from place A to place B, I use a motor vehicle, which is often to use. But since there is another opportunity, even though it's far-fetched, it will be mutter. So on that same logic, there's an expression called machshichim al hatchum. On Shabbos, you can only walk 2,000 amos outside of your city, and after that, you have a restriction called tchum Shabbos, and you can't go further. Now, can I walk to the end of the tchum on Shabbos? So then on Moshe Shabbos, I'm already 2,000 amos into my journey. I mean, today we laugh because 2,000 amos is approximately 1 kilometer. So if I'm driving from here to Yerushalayim and I walk, it's like, why would I go to the end of the tchum and wait to go? I'm driving. That 1 kilometer difference is what? And I should get a taxi from there, not from here. It's going to make 1 kilometer on a 40-kilometer journey. It doesn't make a difference. But remember, in the old days, most of the traveling was done by foot. So if I had to walk to the next city, which was 5 miles away, if I could walk the first mile, or the first kilometer, that's shorter than a mile, if I could walk the first kilometer, on Shabbos, so then I have left to walk on Moed to Shabbos. So essentially what I'm doing is I'm starting my walk for Moed to Shabbos on Shabbos. So isn't that preparation for Moed to Shabbos? So the rule over here is the same way as the talking. If what I'm going to do on Moed to Shabbos is something that I may do on Shabbos, but what stops me from doing it is the Tum, then I'm allowed to walk to the end of the Tum. But if what I'm going to do is something that's also to do on Shabbos, then I may not walk to the end of the Tum. Example, if I want to go visit someone, a social visit or whatever the case may be like that, there's nothing wrong with visiting people on Shabbos, and therefore I may walk to the end of the Tum so that I can get there a little earlier on my Shabbos, because essentially I could have walked there on Shabbos. It's just that when I got to the end of the Tum, I was stuck. I couldn't go further. I had to wait till nightfall, and then I could go further. So I'm preparing for something which I could have done on Shabbos, therefore considered preparation, therefore considered Musa. But if I need to go to my field because it needs an urgent watering, it's been dry all day, and I need to get the watering system going, watering on Shabbos is Asur. So then I cannot walk to the end of the Tum in order to get to my field earlier because the purpose of my walk is for something which is Asur on Shabbos. Therefore, the preparation for such a walk will be considered as Asur. I can't think of a practical application of this in our day and age. We don't tend to walk to the Tum and wait and then move on because today that's not the way we travel. We don't travel by foot. It's so practical, but it was brought down Halacha, so I brought it in. Another exception, and this is a more common one, and that is if there is loss involved. If there would be financial loss involved in avoiding a tircha, if the tircha is purely if the tachana is purely also because of a chana, and for no other reason, not a ism alacha, not a rabbanan, no tircha involved, but if a chana for after Shabbos, and if I don't do it, there will be a loss involved, then we will push aside this restriction of hachana. An example given is if a woman makes a neder that would affect her life between her and her husband has the right to annul the neder. It's called hafaras nedarim. The husband uses he makes an expression when he hears the neder that he's matir it for his wife, his mufalaf, or he says, you may do this, even though she has said, I'm not going to. And that is a husband's koyach, that if a woman takes on a neder that would affect something between him and her, then he may annul the neder. But the Torah says, b'yom shamo, he has to take action on the day that he hears the neder. Not the day that she says it, but the day that the moment that he hears about. And when the day is over, he's lost his opportunity. So if a man discovers his wife made a neder on, now his discovery comes on a Shabbos, whether she made it on Shabbos, or didn't make it on Shabbos is irrelevant, but his discovery came on Shabbos, and now he wants to annul her neder. So if we don't let him do it on Shabbos, he loses the opportunity, and then she'll be stuck. So if a woman says, you know what, I'll never cook a meal for my husband again, and she takes it losh neder, so he can say mutalach on Shabbos, even though essentially she's not cooking on Shabbos, she's only cooking after Shabbos, so therefore would be something that is mutter to do, because there's Hefsid involved. Another interesting halacha comes up. Meat has to be kashered within 72 hours of being shechted. If meat is not kashered within 72 hours, there's still a way to kasher it, but not the normal way. Kashering meat is you wash it, salt it, let it soak in the salt for an hour, and then a couple of rinses afterwards, soaking and rinses afterwards, and then the meat is kosher and kashered, as we call it. If 72 hours have passed and the meat was not kashered, now the only way to kasher it is to salt it and roast it. It has to be done over an open fire and cannot be done in the normal soaking and salting. And therefore the meat will have lost some of its usage. It cannot be cooked anymore. It has to be roasted. That is considered a loss. Could be that on a private basis, maybe not, but for sure on a commercial basis, that is considered a loss. Imagine walking to a butchery and he sells you meat that has been roasted already, and he says, well, you see, we didn't hurry with the melicha, and we were stuck, so we did what was available, and we only have pre-roasted meat. That, for the butcher, would be a loss, and therefore, you use an eitzah, and that is, if the meat gets washed within the 72-hour period, it extends it for another 72 hours. So that washing, if the 72 hours ran out on Shabbos, you shechted meat and you didn't get around to kashering it before Shabbos, and now the 72 hours are running out on Shabbos. So then there is a way to give a heter to wash them, preferably of a goy, and different ways of doing it. But here we get an exception because there's going to be a loss. Another example is you have a muksa item that is, or rather a klisha menachta leheter, so it's not real muksa. But we see that a klisha menachta leheter, what do we say? Klisha menachta leisur, a pen, a scissors, a hammer, whatever we say. You're allowed to move a tarif gufa mekoimre. I need the pen, I need the chair that the pen is on, that's mekoimre, or I need to use the hammer to smash a nut that is tarif gufa, I'm allowed to use it. But mechama letel, or shlo yigone, to move it for its own sake, if I left my hammer outside and it's raining, it's going to get rusty, that's not a reason to move my hammer. But if I have a klisha menachta leheter that is lying around, so then I'm allowed to move it. I feel mechama letel. Now, what's the example mechama letel? What is an example? Shlo yigone, it's something I have lying outside, and I'm afraid that if I leave it out overnight, it's going to get stolen. So already during the day, I can bring it in. So you see, even though I'm not worried about it being stolen during the day, I'm worried about it getting stolen during the night, halacha is that you can move a non-mukta item so that it shouldn't get stolen. So you see, you're moving it for the sake of something which is late on Shabbos. Why? Because it's loss involved, and therefore we will say that it is mutter to do that. If you left laundry out on the line, and it is going to rain, if that laundry was dry when Shabbos came in, and therefore it is not considered mukta, so essentially you can bring the laundry in. You're not allowed to prepare for tonight and make it easier for you. But here, there's a loss involved because it's going to get all dirty and rained on and wet, and I can't use it. I have to dry it, or I might have to re-rinse it. So therefore, if it's going to be a loss involved like that, so then if there's laundry on the line and clouds are gathering, you can bring them in on Shabbos if they are not mukta. You can meet a friend and tell him about an upcoming event and invite him to a Simcha or something like that, and telling him I'm making a wedding on Monday, please come. You may do that even though that appears to be, because you might not meet him later, but therefore you can invite him on Shabbos. Whether you can give him a written invitation is a separate story because of whether you can read the invitation, that is next week's topic, or the week after, but that's what we're moving on to. But verbally, for sure, is mutter. Yeah. To learn something on Shabbos for a test that you're going to have after Shabbos is mutter. Obviously something that you may learn on Shabbos. And the explanation given is because essentially you gain the knowledge now also. So even though essentially you're doing it for later, but you do gain knowledge by what you're learning now. And one more thing before we finish this today's year and this section is if you have what the Israelis call a mitzvah, they have a special going and they tell the kids, whoever comes to Avos Avonim or to Tehillim or whatever like that will get a kartis hagrala, a raffle card. And on Moshe Shabbos, all the boys bring their raffle cards, and they're going to be a raffle on a set of Shnayis, or a BMX bike, or a pair of iPods, whatever the case may be, whether it's mukta item or not mukta item, it's going to be a raffle. But essentially, you're giving out raffle tickets on Shabbos, or a raffle that will take place on Moshe Shabbos. But they all say that this is mutter, this is done for now, this is done as an incentive to get the boys to come. What one should avoid doing is giving, if you have raffle cards that carry different values, then don't write the value on the card, but rather just have a color code. If you've got a red card, you've got a blue card, you've got an orange card, that would be a way to differentiate without denominating a value. But otherwise, it is permissible to give out raffle cards to the kids, even though they're keeping it for a raffle which will take place in the So that hopefully has ended. Hopefully it has been clear that there's a lot of complications, many details here. And next Hashem, we'll move on next week to the next subject. Under that, we wish you all a wonderful day.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.